And welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Craig Coben. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Cardiff City. However, we're going to start by looking back at the 2-0 victory for Fulham against Bristol City Wednesday night. Craig was there, and he's going to walk us through what he saw. But before we do anything else, I have to welcome Craig back to the show. Craig, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ. How are you?
I am well. It's been a while. I look forward to doing the show with you today.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, great. Well, let's get into it. Before we talk about the match Wednesday night, I definitely want you to walk us through that. I want to get your thoughts on the big news yesterday, that there was dual news. We have the appointment of Tony Khan and also the extension for Slavica. Just curious your thoughts on both of these situations.
Well, first, I'm delighted at the extension of Slavica's contract. I think it's a real statement of intent, a statement of confidence in the manager, who has clearly transformed the club, the way it plays, its approach, its mentality. And, of course, a two-year contract doesn't mean he'll stay for 2 years, but it does show at least some sign of continuity in the club, which has gone through a tremendous amount of flux. As far as the appointment of Tony Khan, it's really difficult to say from the outside. I personally have some issues with nepotistic appointments. I appreciate that the club belongs to Shahid Khan and he can do as he likes, but I do think that when you own a sports club, a professional club, that you have some responsibility to the broader public. And when you make an appointment of your own son, even if it is entirely merited, I do think that it is somewhat problematic. It's difficult for me to judge Tony Khan himself. It's difficult for us, any of us from the outside, to judge how effective his sabermetric or his analytic approach is. I think it's interesting in theory, but we can't really peer into the black box and make an assessment. I can only hope that he will be effective as in his new role in supporting the club and supporting the managers and ensuring that we make the right purchases of new players. But, in the U.S., you do often see the owner's son taking, an executive role. So it's not all that uncommon. And sometimes family businesses do perform fairly well in this kind of dynastic way. That being said, I would have preferred, at least as a matter of principle, that appointments be made on the basis of merit and not the basis of family lineage.
Okay, very interesting take there, Craig. I want to go back to you and ask you about Slavica. This is something that we talked about yesterday on the show. I actually asked Mike if he thought 2 years was good enough, was a decent amount of time. Do you like the length, or would you have liked longer than 2 years?
Well, bear in mind these lengths are a little bit of a fiction. If he struggles for whatever reason, he will be out well before 2 years. If he has a better offer from a big club, he will be out before those 2 years are up. What you're actually buying is at least, if someone wants to poach Slavica over the next 2 years, that they will have to pay a substantial amount in order for him to be able to break his contract. I think 2 years is a very long tenure on top of the 16 months he's already been with the club. That will make it longer than he has ever been with any club. So I think the tenure is fine, but I think we should look at the tenure in a way as a part of the negotiations around salary and other working conditions, as opposed to a statement of confidence in the manager.
Okay, very interesting there, Craig. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on Slavica and also on Tony Khan. All right, let's now take a look at the match you were at Wednesday night. Let's just get your opening thoughts on the 2-0 victory for Fulham against Bristol City at Ashton Gate.
It was a fairly comfortable victory. I wouldn't say it was a vintage performance. Fulham looked at times a little bit leggy and a little bit ragged, especially at the back. But we dominated possession in the first half. We were actually quite clinical in taking our chances. And so once we were up 2-0, I think we were then able to sit back a little bit, let Bristol City come on to us, but we maintained our shape and were able to keep the first clean sheet we've had, I think, since the Burton Albion game. So it was an efficient victory. I wouldn't say it was a vintage flowing performance. We had some great moves, and certainly the first goal was fantastic to watch. But Bristol City were also quite poor. They had a couple of really good opportunities, which they didn't take. So I think it was a good away-from-home victory at a time when we had been playing a lot of fixtures, and we could have actually dropped points.
Okay, very good there, Craig. All right, before we get to your observations of the actual match, let's start with the starting 11. I'm curious your thoughts, what was going through your mind an hour before the match. And I'll just mention a couple things that I was thinking about at the time. I was curious that Chris Martin wasn't starting in this match. And also, the choices of fullback. Those were the things that were going through my mind, Ryan Sessegnon and Dennis Odoi, because now you had Ryan Fredericks back. And you also had Scott Malone. So I was curious why he went with Sessegnon. And then, of course, went with Dennis Odoi. So those are just things on my mind. I'm not saying that they were bad moves, but at the time, those were my questions. How about you?
Well, an hour before the match, I think I was fighting through the traffic around Bristol. There was an accident, and it was raining. But when I looked at the lineup, I think when it was apparent to me, there was a bit of rotation because we have had a lot of games, and we have a pretty busy fixture schedule right now. So what I first noticed was that, you know, you had Aite and Cabano in the lineup. And, for example, there was, as you mentioned correctly, there's no Chris Martin. There's also no Aluko as well.
Right. And
what was interesting when they lined up was that Aite was up front in the 4-2-3-1, whereas I think in other games he's been on the wing. What I would say is I sort of looked at that and thought, on the one hand, Slavisa wanted to rest Martin and Aluko for the more important games coming up, or the more difficult games coming up. I also think maybe he thought he wanted to have a little bit of speed, and maybe they thought they could run off the last man in, you know, the back line of Bristol City. So those were the observations that I had. When I looked at the defense, I again looked at it as mostly rotation, at least on the right back side with Odoi in. On the left back side, I thought Scott Malone had a very difficult game against Tottenham, and that may have been one of the reasons why Slavisa decided in favor of Sessegnon. I think that's a particularly interesting decision because, of course, much of the action in the game was along Fulham's left wing and Bristol City's right wing, and there was almost a kind of proxy battle between David Cotterill, the right midfielder for Bristol City, and the left back for us, Sessegnon.
Okay, very good there, Craig. That certainly played it out. I watched the replay last night, and then the rest of the replay I watched this morning, you could really see the battle down the left-hand side with Sessegnon, and like you mentioned, Cottrell, who was a concern of mine going into that match, and it kind of played itself out, but there were good things and bad things about David Cottrell playing, and maybe you can share that when we go through your observations. So let's go to the first half. I'll just share a couple key moments I jotted down, and you can walk us through what you saw. Obviously, we have the goal in the 16th minute by Lucas Piazza, and I don't know how many passes. There were a tremendous amount of passes here that led up to the goal. The pass was by Tom Kearney that Lucas Piazza got and then put in the back of the net, and Fulham are up 1-0. Then in the 26th minute, you had the opportunity for Niskan Skabana, who was unfortunately offside when he put the ball in the back of the net. I believe that was also set up by Kearney. I could be wrong about that. Yeah. Then you had a few opportunities from Bristol City, but Fulham end the half up 1-0, and again, those are the key moments I jotted down there. Craig, you walk us through what you saw in the first half.
Well, I'll make two observations. First, the goal was fantastic. It was, there must have been 25 passes leading to it. I think what surprised me was the ease with which we passed through the middle of the pitch for Piazon to score. And that has to be a reflection as much of Bristol City ball watching as it is our fluid passing. But it was a great one of the best team goals that I've seen Fulham score in a very long time, and it was very well taken by Piazon. The second observation I would make is I actually had, at least from my angle, I thought Bristol City had quite a good chance where Juric had a free header and inexplicably headed it, the ball over the net on a cross, which I think came from Cotterill along the right side. And I do think there was a spell there after our goal where Bristol City was getting down the right side. They were putting in crosses, and we weren't particularly effective in clearing those crosses. There was also a couple nervous moments at the back. I can remember Ream at one point passing the ball to Kalas, and it was a poor pass. Kalas could only head it, and Bristol City were on top of us, and they came close. And then certainly in some of the set pieces as well, we had a few jittery moments. So the first half was a bit strange. I thought we dominated possession, passed the ball fluently, but Bristol City did seem to have some reasonable chances and half chances, sometimes off of set pieces, sometimes when they would go down the right wing and cross the ball in.
Okay, very good. And you and I talked about off air that I was concerned, and I just already said about Cottrell. Talk about his crosses, because they were dangerous in the first half.
Yeah, look, he was getting down the right side. I think, you know, the battle, you know, Piazon often comes inside. You have Sessegnon, you know, bombing down the left side, presumably to take advantage of the weakness in the right back. I don't know his name, Bristol City right back. But that left Cotterill with some space, and there were times when he had an enormous amount of space to cross the ball in. And a couple of the crosses were pretty effective. He was also effective in holding the ball up and playing in this team. The problem was the rest of his team, I think, let him down. I mean, the Juric miss was to me a real shocker. But, you know, on repeated occasions, they couldn't really get the final product in there, even though I didn't think that we commanded the box particularly well.
Okay, Craig, before we move to the second half, I do want to ask you, I don't know if you got a good view of this. I have a feeling it was at the other end. Did you get a look at the Cabano situation?
I could not tell if it was offside. I was sitting at the opposite end. What's interesting about that end of the pitch is the east end of Ashton Gate Stadium, and that's a new stand they have back there. And there were quite a lot of articles, you may recall, in late 2014, early 2015, how they had a guy who watched the games from his shed overlooking that end of the pitch before they had built the new stand. But I couldn't see it. I was at the exact opposite end.
Okay. Fair enough, my friend. All right, let's move to the second half, and I'm just going to mention a few things here. Obviously, we have to talk about the goal in the 54th minute by Tom Kearney. This is set up by Floyd Ayite. This is good pressure and good anticipation by Ayite, and just put it right in the line of fire for Tom Kearney, and he put it in the back of the net real well. So this is a well-taken goal by Tom Kearney. Then I mentioned this to you off air, and I'm curious your thoughts about this. The 57th minute, I'm mentioning this because it was evident when this player came on that Bristol City came to life, and that was Lee Tomlin. He hurt us in the first match, and I thought he was good, at least with what I saw for Bristol City. He comes on then. Then 5 minutes later, Chris Martin comes on for Floyd Ayite, and I'm curious what you saw when Chris Martin came on, what the difference was with Fulham, with Martin on, and then, of course, like we talked about, with Floyd Ayite on. What was the difference? Did they look any different? So I'm curious your thoughts on the second half, Craig. Walk us through it.
Well, I think the principal strategy Bristol City had in the second half, at least initially, was to kick Tom Kearney at every opportunity.
Good point.
Should just mention that the referee was extremely lenient with Bristol City. And I do think these referees do need to start protecting some of the flair players in the championship, because somebody like Kearney is getting kicked off the pitch all the time. And the Bristol City were just noticeable in their cynicism. So I was actually quite gratified when it was Tom Kearney who scored the goal. I also liked the way we scored the goal. It came off by pressing.
Yes.
Bristol City, and then there was an error in the back, and we won the ball. And I think that's slightly unusual. We are not, generally speaking, a pressing team. In fact, what was interesting about Bristol City tried at times to press us. They would even prevent us from doing the short pass on the free kick because they figured force us to kick the ball, force the goalie to kick it down the pitch, where Bristol City would be able to win the ball in the air. What's interesting here on our goal is that we were pressing them, they made a mistake, and Tom Kearney took a very, it was a fantastic finish by Tom Kearney. And that is a little bit unusual. I can't remember all that many goals that we've scored off the back of that kind of pressing. Now, after we were up 2-0, I think a decision was probably taken to sit back a little bit, soak up some of the pressure, and just keep our shape. Because whenever we were vulnerable until then, it was usually because we'd be running up the pitch with the ball, we'd lose it, and then there would be a counterattack by Bristol City, which, by the way, has been a little bit the story of our year. A lot of the goals that have been scored against us have been on the break. And so I think after the second goal by Tom Kearney, we kept our shape a little bit better. But yes, Bristol City had more of the possession than they had before. And certainly Lee Tomlin was a key part of that. But I don't think they had all that many chances. Maybe there was one exception, that shot, I can't remember by who, from outside the box, which a Button almost spilled, but managed to recover just in time. I don't remember too many other particularly good opportunities or clear opportunities.
Correct. There was a situation. I'm sorry to break in. There was a situation where Tomas Kalas had to make a late block that looked like a really good opportunity that I thought was a great block by Tomas Kalas.
You're right. Yep. Look, I didn't think we were super. We tried to walk down the game. I don't think we were particularly strong in doing that. Bristol City had a fair amount of space. They moved the ball around. It wasn't a vintage defensive display of just preventing them from getting a sniff at goal. They had a few chances. They had a bit of space, but they lacked the quality really to hurt us. So in the end, we kept a clean sheet, but I wouldn't say it was a classic defensive effort.
Okay, very good. While we're talking about this, I want to get your thoughts on David Button in this match, because I did notice he came off his line more than I normally see him. Thoughts on his display in this match?
Yeah, I thought overall it was a pretty good display. I mean, and he did come off. I guess it was in the first half. Once he came way out and headed the ball, and he was pretty alert to the danger. So I thought overall he wasn't tested all that much, but when he was tested, he did the job. So it was a fairly solid display. I thought his distribution from the back as well was pretty good. Bristol City, as I said before, they were preventing him from doing the short pass very often. But he was able to put his goal kicks where he wanted to. So it was a solid display. I don't think he was really put to the test all that much.
Okay, very good. Okay, let's talk about one more thing, because I'm definitely curious your thoughts on Chris Martin. What was his impact when he came on? You and I talked off air that he was able to hold up the ball like we want him to. Do you think that was also part of the strategy in the second half, to keep our shape, and he was a part of that?
Absolutely. I think he was a key part of that. We can bear in mind we also put in a Luco a few minutes later.
Right.
I think the idea was to hold possession a little bit more. I think Aite and especially Cabano sometimes have a tendency to run into they're very skilled players, but they sometimes can run into blind alleys. So we just needed to have maybe a little bit more composure on the ball and a little bit more control of the pace of the ball. Not to mention, I think Martin's height was probably helpful, especially when you get into this, especially because Bristol City in some cases was just trying to go route one.
Okay, very good there, Craig. All right, let's look at the stats. I want to see what you think of the stats. So let's look at the full-time stats. Possession, 59% to 41% in favor of Fulham. Shots, 11-7 in favor of Fulham. On target, 3-2, in favor of Fulham. Corners were even at 5. Crosses were in favor of Bristol City, 24-21. Tackles were in favor of Fulham, 24-19. Attempted passes, 635 to 442 in favor of Fulham. Tacking passes, 264 to 155 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, this is a good stat that I always like to look at, 83%, which is a good amount for Fulham, 76% for Bristol City. Accurate passes, 531 to 337 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels in favor of Bristol City, 14-10 in fouls, were shaded by Bristol City, 11-10. All right, Craig, what do the full-time stats tell you?
I'm actually surprised because it seems like the referee almost never called a foul on Bristol City, even though they spent much of the match kicking us off the pitch. And I said they were really targeting Kearney. Look, the key statistic is, of course, the huge differential in possession as well as passes completed. Fulham is a possession-oriented team based on short, accurate passing, and that is again reflected in the game that we saw. I think in particular in the first half, we were able to really control the pacing of the game. So in that respect, it was a kind of typical Fulham performance. A lot of possession, a lot of short passing, a little bit shaky at the back, and there were some chances for the other side. I think in this particular case, we were not playing a particularly clinical opposition, and so the score ended the way it did.
Okay. Is it safe to say that Tammy Abraham being out in this match changed it to Fulham's advantage here? Because he is a serious threat, and without him, they were probably a little toothless here.
Yeah, but look, if you're relying on one player, then you don't have a very good team. I think what really shocked me, you know, I thought Juric, who, by the way, he looked like at least from afar, you know, with the man bunny, looked like a mini Zlatan Ibrahimovic, maybe. You know, I was surprised that he wasn't posing. You know, he had a lot of presence. He's very physical. I was surprised that he wasn't able to do a little bit better against us. But yeah, they were toothless. I also thought in the midfield, the way they were set up, they seemed to be outnumbered in the midfield. I think it's because they were playing a 4-4-2.
Right.
And, you know, we were our usual 4-2-3-1. And so you end up with having, you know, it's basically 3-on-2 in the middle of the pitch, right? And so I do think that their midfield was a little bit overrun. I also thought their right back was under pressure for much of the game. I think he had a poor game. I think he was to blame for the second goal. Sessegnon was running past them over and over again, even if the final ball wasn't quite always there. So, you know, they had some serious deficiencies in their team, and they're a much worse team than when they played us at Craven Cottage earlier in the season.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, let's now go to man of the match. Who's your man of the match?
Oh, Tom Kearney by quite some margin. I think he dominated play. That's why they kept kicking him. Scored a nice goal. You know, he had an assist. And he really dictated the tempo. I think he was dominant this match.
Okay, great. I want to ask you about another player who really works his socks off and definitely gets beat up while he's working very hard, and that's Kevin McDonald. I don't think we talk enough about the job that he does. How effective was he in this match?
I thought he had a pretty good game. You know, he supports the defense, especially when you have your fullbacks flying up. He has to sit back and make sure that the defense has enough people for any counterattack. He broke up play, held the ball up well. Didn't, you know? I think his passing, I don't know what the passing accuracy statistics were, but his passing was pretty good. He had a good game. I thought Johansson had an okay game. Johansson wasn't quite as strong as he normally is, but again, I think we were up against a fairly weak Bristol City midfield.
Okay, very good there. Craig, okay, to finish up, let's rate Slavisa, the job of the head coach, on a scale of 1 to 10. What would you give Slavisa for this match?
I'd give him a 7 or 8. I think, you know, we have the right lineup.
I think he went with as weak a lineup as he could get away with and still with the victory. I think the 4-2-3-1 again works. The team played fairly fluidly. I think his substitutions were timely and strengthened. The team seemed to didn't miss a beat when we made the substitutions. It's hard really to fault anything that he did. I think he does have some challenges here because we have a little bit of fixture congestion in part because of the FA Cup run and we had fielded our first team against Tottenham. So we had some challenges. It was important to get this victory and still keep the squad fresh so that, going into Saturday's game we don't have every player being exhausted.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, let's now transition. Let's talk about this massive match on Saturday against Cardiff City. And I think Fulham are going to be facing a completely different team than they faced in the FA Cup at Cardiff City. I'm expecting a different team. And their form is the same as Fulham, which is interesting because I'm going to go through. Let's start here. I've got some information from whoscored.com. Let's look at the table. Fulham are currently seventh with 14 victories, 10 draws, 8 losses. We've scored 54. We've given up 37. We're in a plus 17 goal differential, which is really good. And we're in 52 points. Mm-hmm. Cardiff are 12th. They have 13 victories, 6 draws, 14 losses. They've scored 45. They've given up 47. They're on a minus 2 goal differential. And they're on 45 points. What's interesting about both, in the last 6, we've both won 4 and we've lost 2. So that's they're on the same path as Fulham. It's very interesting. Now let's look for some characteristics. I'll share them with you, Craig. According to whoscored.com, these are the strengths of Cardiff City. Very strong at attacking set pieces, coming back from losing positions, and creating scoring chances. They are strong in creating chances through individual skill, aerial duels, stealing the ball from the opposition. They have several weaknesses listed. Avoiding offside, keeping possession of the ball, defending against long shots, defending against skillful players, defending counterattacks, and avoiding fouling in dangerous areas. Their style: take a lot of shots, long balls, attempt crosses often, attack through the middle, and they're non-aggressive. I do want to mention their head coach is Neil Warnock, who I do respect, and he will have this team ready to go. I expect that. And according to whoscored.com, they are projecting a 4-4-2. So just keep that in mind. Players to look out for would be Zahor and Hoylett up front, Gunnarsson and Rails in central midfield, and Harris on the left. I watched a lot of video. He was flashing all through the videos I was watching, so that's a player to look out for as well. They do have some players to keep your eye out in this match. I also want to mention that the team news, according to whoscored.com, is that their striker, Reese Healy, is out for up to 9 months after tearing his knee ligaments against Rotherham last Saturday. And that Ricky Lambert is a doubt for this match. He continues to struggle with a back problem, and his involvement for the rest of the season will be decided game by game. So he is a doubt. And fullback Lee Peltier has had surgery on an ankle problem, ruling him out for 2 months, while center back Bruno Ukilmanga is out with a knee injury. So that's some information for you, Craig, on whoscored.com in front of this match. So just let me get your overall opening thoughts on this upcoming match here.
Well, okay. It feels like, at least on paper, very similar to many of the other games that Fulham have played. We play a possession style. We have short passes, almost kind of like a quasi-Barcelona, but we're weak in the air, and we do have some defensive frailties. Cardiff and Neil Warnock are probably going to play a much more direct style. I know you said they're not aggressive, but they will probably be stepping up that aggression a little bit and trying to score off of set pieces or through the air or on the counterattack. That feels like, which has been the story of our season, and the question is how effective we will be in executing our plan of keeping possession and avoiding some of the mistakes that allow teams to score against us and against the run of play. I saw Cardiff. I mean, I saw the match on the FA Cup match on television. It wasn't very close, and they were really poor. And I didn't see the match in August. It was August with a 2-2 draw you know, in principle, we should win by playing our game. I think the key question, as ever, is not just whether we can be clinical enough to score goals. I think we will, but will we be able to prevent some of the errors that seem to, the defensive lapses that seem to undo us at times?
Okay, very good, Craig. There's also something else that I wanted to ask you about, because teams that have frustrated Fulham have been the ones that don't give us the space to play. So I'm curious, you know, in these situations, what can Fulham do to create that space? Because it happens very often. You know, again, if you look at Fulham, if you play tight to them, you can frustrate them and they can make mistakes like you're talking about here. So if this happens tomorrow, how do they adjust here? I'm curious, you know, if you're Slavica, how you handle this situation if teams do play tight on you.
Well, again, I guess the question is, where are they playing tight against us? So where Fulham have sometimes struggled is when teams selectively press us, because some of our players are in the back aren't as quite as good on the ball as in the midfield. And if you are caught in possession in the back, you know, you're suddenly under a tremendous amount of pressure. And that has happened on several occasions this season. So I think the question, since Fulham are very committed to passing the ball out from the back and not hoofing it out of the back, because we're not very strong in the air, we're going to need to stay very disciplined and try and move it out. Now, once you get to the midfield, I think the bigger issue is when it is very tiring to press a team all match. So it's a question of how Cardiff and when Cardiff decide to press us in the back, and also when they try to get tight on us in the midfield. I would expect, if I were Cardiff, and having seen Warnock coach other teams, you know, they may selectively press, but probably in the midfield they'll use their 4-4-2, sit back and try to catch us on the break. And I think what Fulham need to do is they need to make sure that if they lose the ball, that we still have some semblance of shape so that we can prevent a counterattack. But that has been, you know, we are committed to this style of play, and that is inevitably a risk around it.
Okay, so basically, in these situations, you see it as, because we don't hoof the ball, that we just have to be true to who we are and be careful with our passing and just try to wear our team out.
Look, I think if we can score a goal early, it will help us, not just for the obvious reason that scoring a goal early improves your chances of winning, but also means we don't have to commit as many players forward, and we can maintain our shape a little bit better and use possession almost as a defensive tactic as opposed to a purely offensive one. So that's one of the reasons why I think it's important for Fulham to score early. I think one of the reasons why we sometimes struggle is we often have to come from behind, which means we're committing men forward and the possession is all great, but we need a final product. I think if we can get a lead, then that possession can wear out the other side.
Okay, so good examples could be the match you just went to against Bristol City, and then Burton Albion, where, you know, you get the lead and then you can use possession, like you said, in a defensive manner.
Or against Barnsley at home, exactly. Those kinds of matches are – and then what you actually find is you kind of run the other side ragged and they become demoralized. I hate to say it, it was a little bit like Tottenham did to us in the FA Cup fifth round match as well. But yeah. That's – you know, we play a possession style game. We're not a strong team in the air. We're not a route one team. And Slavica has built a team, a highly skilled team around that strategy. The key, of course, is to get that early goal so that then we can use possession, in order to frustrate the other side, as opposed to trying to push forward, and God forbid we lose possession of the ball, then we don't have our shape and we're vulnerable to a counterattack.
The counters.
That's happened in so many games.
No, listen, that all makes sense. That's why the lead for Fulham is so important, because they can use it to their advantage. And then when they're behind, it leaves them open to mistakes and counterattacks. That all makes sense, Craig. All right, my friend, let's now look at key players tomorrow for Fulham. Who do you see as the key players?
Look, I think it's going to be our midfield guys again. I think it always is. Kearney, Johansson are absolutely critical to controlling the flow of the match. They are probably our two best players. And I think when they play well, the rest of the team sort of feeds off of what they're able to do. So I would say Tom Kearney and Steph Joe.
Okay, very good. I have something that you just mentioned, Johansson. It's something that Emilio said that just stood out to me, and I hope you don't mind me asking this. Johansson has been a fantastic player for us, but Emilio's noticed that lately, one in three matches he's been dominant, and then the other two he hasn't been the same type of player. Have you noticed that as well, that he hasn't been as consistent as he has been in the beginning of the season? And I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay.
Look, I mean, they play a lot of games, and we've had a lot of games in succession. I think, like everybody else, he was a bit overrun in the Tottenham match.
Yeah.
But, you know, he carries actually quite a big burden because, you know, he's kind of back there with McDonald, but he has to really link up with the attack. And so
right.
I think he is actually the key player for the outlet pass in the midfield. And so he carries an enormous burden. He does get exposed at times. He does, you know, he had a couple of missed passes and he was dispossessed, I think, on one or two occasions against Bristol City. But he's an absolutely critical player for us. And I think he's probably lower Premiership quality.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. If you're Slavisa, what's your strategy tomorrow? You've already talked about getting the early goal, so I agree with that. But how would you set up Fulham tomorrow?
4-2-3-1, like we always do. I'd start Martin up front, and
okay.
I'd put Aluko back in the lineup. Those
okay.
would be my changes. As far as the left backs go, Malone versus Sissoni on the left side, I don't really have a very strong view. Probably prefer Fredericks to Odoi on the right side. But I think we've now settled on a pretty good formation. The 4-2-3-1 seems to suit our team quite well.
Okay, you know, it's funny. You kind of read my mind because I was going to ask you about the fullbacks. You know, did you have a preference? And you basically said you could go either way with each side. But isn't that a great problem to have, Craig, that, you know, listen, we can have Odoi play there, you can have Fredericks play there. Then on the other side, you have a decision. You can rotate between Malone and Sessegnon. But sounds like to me you don't have a clear-cut winner for either fullback.
No, look, Malone has been inconsistent. I think against the weaker teams he plays pretty well, but against the higher quality ones, I think he tends to get exposed. Also, don't think his crossing is as good as it sometimes can be. Sessegnon is probably the more superior talent, but he's younger and he makes a lot of mistakes. And you even saw that in the Bristol City match where he gave the ball away on several occasions. And then one time in the second half, he kind of it was in the first half, actually. He was dribbling up through the middle, got past two or three players, but was dispossessed, and suddenly Fulham, you know, are short at the back, and Bristol City are counterattacking. So, you know, there are pros and cons to both players. I think probably in balance, I would probably go with Malone. On the right side, I think Fredericks is just a little bit more consistent than Odoi. Odoi, you know, is very talented, but again, I think Fredericks has a little bit more passing quality and positional discipline, but I don't see a whole lot to choose between them.
Okay. So the drop-off isn't that huge there, Craig. Okay, very interesting. All right, let's get into predictions. Before I get your prediction, I want to share a poll I did on the Cutters Talk Twitter page. I had 178 votes. Win, 65%.
Wow.
Draw, 25%. Loss, 10%. So I guess you could say confidence is high, my friend. I see this as an extremely tough match. Out of the two, this is the one that I feared because I was expecting a reaction from Warnock. And like I mentioned, their form is the same as Fulham, and they've beaten some good teams. They are playing well, so this is not going to be an easy match. So before I give my prediction, I want your prediction.
I think Fulham will win the match 2-1.
2-1.
But I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be an easy away fixture. Cardiff will be difficult. And normally, I know the FA Cup wasn't the case in the FA Cup, but normally the away fixture of Cardiff is a tough place to go.
Right. And I agree with that.
The FA Cup match was a bit of a one-off because, you know, it had an 11:30 start and, you know, had a crowd that was very small, and it just felt very different.
Well, let's hope we have a similar result, though. Let's hope we get a victory here. All right, Craig, I'm going to match you here. I'm going to go 2-1 as well. This is an important match. This is really important because it's funny. I was watching the interview with Savisa earlier, Craig, and Sarah asked Savisa how important it is that Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds United are playing before, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but wanted his thoughts on that, and he didn't even want to talk about that. All he cared about was talking about his match, and that's his mentality. His mentality, it's funny, it does remind me of a coach up here. It's one match at a time. So it's an interesting situation tomorrow because you do have those teams playing each other, and if Fulham get a victory, Craig, we're right in the thick of this.
Yep. Look, I think our objective has to be to get a playoff spot, and tomorrow's game is going to be very, very important. I expect this to go down to the wire, because not only do we have to overtake people ahead of us, but even behind us there are some teams that aren't very far away. It's going to be super tight, and the pressure is on everybody. I think, you know, the pressure is going to start to tell on the different teams as we head towards the end of the season. I do think the team has a good mentality. We've shown time and time again that we've been able to come back from adversity, to draw games or win games that where we were losing, and that is something that was not the case in the previous two or three seasons. So I do think my feeling, again, just the feeling that the players have confidence in Slavisa and in his methods, because again, when you're playing that passing game, you need to really believe in the manager and in your other players. Otherwise, if you don't have confidence, it's very difficult to confidently pass the ball out from the back, for example. So I think we're as well positioned as possible. My one concern is there, you know, this is, I don't know how many fixtures we've played in the last two and a half weeks. It's a lot of games. And, you know, we don't have that deep of a squad. We can't really rotate that much, and we're going to have to really be up for it on Saturday.
Okay. Final thoughts before we go, Craig.
I think we're going to see what the team is going to be made of in the next couple of games, because we are better than the teams we are playing, but the pressure is on. And the style we play, you know, is one where you are vulnerable to being, you know, mugged, where teams can score against you, against the run of player. We need to be stronger in the back. We need to be more clinical up front if we're going to get into the playoffs. We have everything still to play for.
Okay, very good there, Craig. Great show. Thank you so much, Craig, before we wrap doing this with me.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap this up for this episode of Cottage Talk. For Craig Colbin, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.